In a Manhattan courtroom, Apple stands its ground in the ebook price-fixing case, and book industry insiders have to settle for double-digit growth in ebook sales. Hello and welcome everyone to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series Beyond the Book. My name is Chris Keneally, your host, and it's Friday, so that means Andrew Albanese from Publishers Weekly, senior writer there, is joining us with a weekly roundup of the news in book publishing. Andrew, welcome back.
Greetings, Chris.
Well, indeed, we do have some figures for the year end, and tell us what we learned this week.
Yeah, that's right. So in Monday's issue, we're going to have our roundup of year-end figures, and there are some notable numbers in that. Indeed, 2012 was a pretty good year for the industry. Overall, trade sales were up about 7%, and for ebooks, we saw yet more robust growth. There was a hefty 42% jump in ebook sales in 2012. Now, a lot is being made about that figure, 42%, because in fact, it's the slowest percentage of growth ever for ebooks so far since we've been measuring it. But that's also because we're talking about real money now. Back when we used to always see those gaudy triple digit growth numbers for ebooks, the sums were actually probably pretty small. But ebooks in 2012 accounted for over $3 billion in sales. And there's also a slew of new ventures and devices, including, of course, Apple, that are moving that market forward very quickly.
Well, you mentioned the magic word when it comes to book publishing, Apple. And this week we saw a flurry of filings in the case, the price-fixing case that is lurching towards trial. What's that trial going to look like from where you sit?
It looks like a bloodbath from where I sit right now. And that may be because I've just been buried in paper all week going through all these pretrial filings. But as you say, I mean, we are now lurching towards that June 3rd trial. It's coming up very quickly. It begins the week after we head out of Book Expo America here. And there are now hundreds and hundreds of pages detailing exactly what that trial is going to look like. So what have we learned? Broad strokes, really nothing new. This is the same case now that these new filings are in and the trial is set up as it always was, but it's just fleshed out with evidence, and in fact, a lot more evidence. We have depositions and documents from all the major publishers, from Amazon, from Barnes & Noble, from Random House, which was not one of the original defendants. They play a prominent role here, and there's a lot of expert testimony too, a lot of which is the subject of more legal wrangling. This morning, I'm enjoying reading Apple's proposed findings of fact, which is essentially what Apple is going, its game plan for how it's going to argue this trial. And it's really pretty fascinating reading. If you buy Apple's narrative, this isn't a case of conspiracy. It's just a story of competition. Apple argues in great detail about how intense the discussions were between each individual publisher and Apple over inclusion in their ebook store, and how each publisher haggled over its terms. So, there was no conspiracy, just Apple being Apple, and creating a store for books like it did with iTunes. The difference, of course, is that there already was an iTunes-like dominant platform for books. That, of course, Amazon's Kindle. And that model operated on a totally different model than the one that Apple traditionally operated on. And it was also one that publishers were clearly not very happy with because of Amazon's low, low pricing. In the final analysis, Apple, like the publishers, goes on to show in great detail that indeed the iPad did in fact lead to more competition. That all this whole episode that we're now fighting about in court was in fact pro-competitive and not anti-competitive. But so what? As we've noted on this podcast before and in my reporting previously, this case really isn't about industry. It's about consumers. And in its reply brief to Apple, the government acknowledges that, yes, ebook competition is greater. The market is growing. But the way that competition was achieved was collusive and illegal, and it must be challenged.
Well, indeed, it's going to be fascinating. As you say, unexpected twists and turns. What else jumps out at you in those filings? Any names or organizations that surprise you?
It looks like they pretty much deposed everybody who ever came in contact with an ebook in these major houses, and also Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So, yeah, a number of things jump out at me. They mix for some really fascinating reading, and I can't wait to see not only the testimony that they delivered, but what they say on the stand if these people are actually called to testify. Spotify Live. A couple of the highlights, you know, what really jumped out at me is Random House's role here. As you know, Random House was not one of the original defendants. And Madeline McIntosh is all over Random House's digital director, Madeline McIntosh, that is all over these filings for Apple. They've subpoenaed a lot of her, or they've obtained a lot of her emails. And she seems to suggest that, yeah, there was something a little funny going on here. But again, we'll have to see what those emails look like when they're actually put in context. Amazon, there's, you know, David Nagar and Russ Grandinetti, two of their big players when it comes to ebooks. Their testimony is all over these documents. All of the major publishers are involved here. So you've got the heads of each house are, you know, intimately deposed here about their businesses. Some of this stuff, you know, we haven't seen it all yet. We only see snippets in these filings, but if it goes public, it really will offer a great look at how the digital transition was being handled by these houses. And a lot of that's going to be uncomfortable, I think, for some of these houses. They're talking about things and business practices that I think they'd rather keep to themselves. And the expert witnesses. I mean, there are a bevy of expert witnesses that each side is now challenging as to their appropriateness to testify at trial. So the filings also confirm a few things that we knew all along, that one, you know, publishers made less money with the agency model, and that Amazon sold books at a loss. At one point in the Apple filing, Russ Grandinetti, who's at Amazon, acknowledges that they were losing between $2 and $7, I believe, on a number of books. And in fact, on one Pat Conroy book, which I believe Open Road published, they lost $72,000 in 1 week. This is what Amazon is admitting. So, you know, we always knew that this was the case, but now we have some confirmation. So yes, lots of interesting stuff in here. And next week I'll be doing a long sort of tale of the tape article on the trial, and I'll sort of handicap what we're going
to
hear.
Well, we can look forward to that. As you say, ugly details if you're inside one of those publishing houses, but juicy material for a reporter at Publishers Weekly.
Very much so.
And finally, Andrew, what about some of the potential legal maneuvering we'll see? As you mentioned, Book Expo is coming up, a focus for the trade book industry, and I wonder whether at least one of those parties would like to get out of this case.
Yeah, you know, as of now, Penguin, which is not settled with the states or the consumer class, is still scheduled to be a defendant at this trial. And I'm stunned by this. In fact, in the next week or so, I would not be surprised if Penguin either comes to some sort of settlement to get out of this or finds a way to try to postpone this again, because I just don't understand what they have to gain by going through this as a defendant. As it is, these filings make clear how much money and how much time each of the major publishers has had to pour into this case to defend it, and how uncomfortable it's going to be, because all of these executives are going to participate in this trial. Many of them have already settled, as you know, so you know there's no, you know, sanctions for them at the end of the rainbow necessarily, win or lose. But nevertheless, they're going to be giving testimony here, and their business practices are going to have a light shined on them. Why Penguin is still actually involved in this as a defendant with the states and the consumer class is a really tough question to answer. I don't know. I have to imagine that they're still looking at a way to dismount this from this case gracefully. But as of now, we will see Penguin at the defense table on June 3rd.
Well, you know, you mentioned the idea of a Penguin dismounting. That sounds a little bit awkward, but whatever way they do it, we know you'll report on it for us. Andrew Albanese, senior writer at Publishers Weekly, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Chris.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. Follow us on Twitter, find Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.